You're listening to Irish Radio, Canada's Home and Abroad, and recently we were talking about the Fitzwilliam migration and the Culloden estate and that period of time. And in doing so, I found myself on a landing page, which is the great thing about the World Wide Web in this day and age. You can find yourself on a landing page, and it is what it says, a landing page. And it was the New Brunswick Irish Portal. And then what greets you is choose a database. So not only are you arriving in, but you're being given an option straight away into a number of subsections and a huge treasury, a powerful resource. And I'm privileged to be able to have a chat with Meredith Bath. And Meredith is an archivist, and she's with the Private Sector Records Unit. And while she is working for the government of New Brunswick as an archivist, she's enjoying residing in Dublin for a period of time and getting total immersion into Irish culture. Meredith, thank you so much for taking the time. Real pleasure to have you here and to meet you.
Oh, it's wonderful, Austin, and it's great to be joining you today from Dublin.
So the New Brunswick Irish Portal, a little overview. Give us a little overview.
Yeah, for sure. And I have to say that, as a staff member of the Provincial Archives of New Brunswick, I've returned to the portal for different research inquiries over the years. And even, I have to confess, even on some down days when it's been a bit slow on the reference desk, sometimes it's really interesting to pop on. As you just said, there are so many different databases that you could spend quite a bit of time scrolling through, and they include documents such as letters to and from Ireland of people who made a life-altering journey across the sea. We take it for granted. I'm over here going to school, and I can just hop on a plane and go home to New Brunswick. However, it was a different case. People left their families, their lives behind when they made the crossing. And it's really, the resources that were left in, the holdings that we now have in the provincial archives are really rich, and describe much of the life either in New Brunswick or back home. So I'll give a few examples of that. But first of all, I just want to say the Irish Portal was put together well over a decade ago, in the early 2000s, and was the work of Stuart Donovan at St. Thomas University and many of the archivists at the Provincial Archives of New Brunswick. They also helped, I believe, with the Irish Society of New Brunswick, put together In Wake of Dark Passage exhibit, and that talked about the Quarantine Islands, Partridge Island, and St. John, New Brunswick, which was pivotal and was both a, I guess you could say, kind of a place of joy and relief that people have made it, but also great sorrow, as many people might have made the trip across the water if they were lucky, but succumbed to various illnesses. And the same thing at Middle Island in the Miramichi too. So I was going through the letter portal, and I returned to it from time to time, and it's really amazing to see what exists. And there was a nephew writing his uncle from County Mayo and talking about conditions in the country, people's unrest, but also including details like that, what the conditions were like that winter, how much snow and frost they had, that he hoped to go to America, but he didn't know if he'd be able to. His mother, he didn't want to leave his mother. She was in poor health. But in going through the records, one thing that I noticed was there were a lot of the estates sent their tenants to the New World in various waves of immigration, and especially around the famine in 1847. So I found the report of somebody that Henry Gore Booth and Robert Gore Booth who were baronets, had the basically an estate in Sligo, and they had sent their they had sent various tenants. So there was a John Purdon who was writing saying that it had taken them 34 days to cross. There'd been three births and only one baby had survived, but they had been very lucky. They had had only two passengers die out of I think about 503, and he thought that there were 16 stowaways based on the calculating of the lists before and after. And of course the head of that estate at the time in Sligo was Robert Gore Booth. And these Gore Booths, you might know, are the grandfather and uncle of Constance Markievicz, who was a leader in the 1916 Rising. But, their past is kind of controversial. Some historians say that they had, you know, mortgaged the estate and helped pay for the upkeep of the tenants and that their transportation. And others say that, you know, they were, tenants were forced onto leaky, overcrowded boats and sent to the New World. So those are just a couple of examples, and what's really amazing is that there's different levels of writing ability. Like this one is sent by an agent of the estate. So it's very well written, very well documented. But other letters are more, you know, kind of fractured in depending on people's literacy level. And it's really amazing to see kind of what they're writing about, whether it's conditions of family. A woman from Kilkenny was also writing her brother, Valentine Gibbs, who had settled in northern New Brunswick, about conditions between siblings and some of the rivalry, and that, you know, one brother was just, you know, up to his usual, you know, no good, no help, basically tactics. So, you know, it's really interesting to see what comes out of them. The other databases include newspaper articles. So there's some really good articles that contain views on immigration, notices of arrivals, illnesses. There were different cholera epidemics that occurred, as well as different pox that broke out. And the thing that I find the most heartbreaking, you know, we send text messages, you know, rapidly. We could text someone from Canada and Ireland and hear back almost instantly. However, that was very much not the case for people back in the day. And there are wanted information ads for people. So there was a Martin Curley who was settled in Massachusetts, and he was waiting to hear from his brother Thomas, wife and niece. And so there was an ad placed in the paper for any information. And so that was in the, I believe that was around the years of the famine too, seeing if they had made it over. And of course, lots of people settled initially in New Brunswick and made their way down to what we would refer to colloquially as the Boston States, where the work, was in the different mills and the different industries. So if they stayed in New Brunswick, sometimes it wasn't always for a long period, they kind of headed off to where their family may have settled, or around the coastal regions of the province too. There's some great passenger lists, but unfortunately they're all pre-famine. There's about 135 lists in existence, which are about 10,000 entries.
And they're all when you say pre-famine. Obviously, then there was a lot of traffic prior to the famine that was coming this way. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I noticed, you mentioned Middle Island, and I had the opportunity to go on to Middle Island. Geographically, Partridge Island is having to go around Nova Scotia. And it would appear like geographically you would say, well, why or how would ships end up there? Because if you were heading into St. Lawrence, yes, you were heading for Gros Isle, and Middle Island made sense in that situation. I'm familiar with the story there in Middle Island of the captain who threatened to ground his his ship. But what was drawing people to St. John?
That's a really good question, Austin, and I don't know that I'm the most equipped to answer, but I know that it was a relatively safe harbor to land, and kind of a way that you could then disperse throughout the province for other opportunities, and it was the main port of New Brunswick, of the colony. So and I think, you know, a transportation hub along the New England coast. So you would also have, you know, people stopping in Halifax or heading towards New York. And so that was kind of a key pivotal port on the eastern seaboard. And at that time too, it was I'm not well enough informed to say, you know, was it heavily populated, but I do know that they had quite a large population in the colony.
Right. And of course, what you're basically telling me was this was on a shipping route.
Yeah, on a shipping route and kind of an entry point into the rest of the colony.
Okay. And then at that time, it would also, as we Newfoundlanders refer to two boaters, this would have applied here as well, where you would have had two boaters that they would have come to Canada, to New Brunswick, and, as you say, worked their way on down towards Boston from there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
So a little about Partridge Island. I know that Partridge Island is not open to the public because there's contaminants, as I understand it, would prevent it from being open. But it, like Gros Ile, was a quarantine island, as I understand it, and that there is a large graveyard there of people also. And it is treated, and I know it is very much treated with the respect associated with that. Have you approximate numbers that may have been passed through and are buried on Partridge Island? Or is that is on the...
That's a good question.
And that's the kind of information that is on the database.
Yes. And I did not check the figures beforehand, unfortunately.
You're here to tell us where to go looking for them.
Yes. So, and so that's something that I... So basically too, the other thing that I just want to follow up on your point about people leaving and going to, into the States. There are also, the provincial archives too, as this database was done, you know, a few, years ago. I would also direct people to our collection search. And we, recently launched, a search function on our website. It's under news or what's new. And we have a collection search there that also people can search for under the search term of Ireland. And there's different collections of family letters. There's also a Londonderry or Derry migration list from around the, that might also be pre-famine as well too, of a passenger list too of people that came over. So those are just interesting resources too if you're interested in exploring your search. I know I worked on a collection of letters that had been dropped off at the Salvation Army and donated to us that had just been amongst, I think, a relative's belongings that had been dropped off at the Salvation Army, and one of the workers had donated it to the Provincial Archives, and it's a wonderful collection of letters of people who would have arrived in the 1840s, 50s, and were kind of like the first generation of New Brunswickers. So I think some of the children have born in Ireland, some of them had been born in New Brunswick, and it's correspondence between or from a brother to a sister who'd gone to find work and lived his life in the States, but they still, that was how they kept in touch. And so those are just some of the different databases and resources that we have on our on our website. Another thing too, if people are interested in, you know, place names and where the origins of some of the places came, the influence or the impact of the settlers, we have it in our place names across the province. There's Wicklow in Carleton County, Waterford in Kings County, Irishtown just outside of Moncton. Woodstock, of course, is near Kilkenny and is in Carleton County as well. And Dungarvan, we have our own Dungarvan River on the Miramichi. So is the place, the legend of the Dungarvan Whooper. So it kind of lives on that way.
And, you know, we all focus, and there's a huge focus on the 1847, that period, the Black 47, mm-hmm. and the famines. But I'm looking here, and there's social welfare in New Brunswick, 1784. And this is under St. John's Almshouse Records. As you say, there's a lot of information out there pre-famine. And New Brunswick would have been, as part of the colonies, the Irish were coming and settling right up until and including, but were well established in many ways by the time the 1840s famines hit.
Yes, that's right, exactly. And the and then of course we have a number of people too, I know, who left the north post famine as well and established. There were definitely different merchants. I know the McKean family left County Tyrone, I believe, mm-hmm. in the 1860s, 1870s, and they became lumber merchants too. Right. But then they had their connections through Belfast and Northern Ireland and England, and St. John was still, you know, an important port city as well too at that time. But they really helped, you know, build St. John, and you can really have the flavor of the Irish connection there too, not just in the pubs, but also in some of the ways the buildings and the houses are laid out. Mm-hmm. I remember a house went on the market recently, and it was known to have a Dublin kitchen in the bottom of the brick. It's almost like we have a kind of an interesting architecture in St. John, where it's almost like a mix between houses that were built in certain parts of Dublin, but then also that kind of mimic a New York brownstone. They're really beautiful buildings, and you know, there's still different features that the merchants would have wanted put into their houses that would be you know, that they would have brought over from Ireland.
So, Merthyr, then, when we look at the databases, as is a case in mm-hmm. a lot of archives, you can go online and you can get a certain amount. Is there a lot of information that is not yet available, or you would need to go in and go through microfiche or other forms of records if you were doing research that the online would not bring you the full picture, that you might need to literally go make an appointment, sit down and review original documents?
I think that, you know, starting out, and I agree, Austin, I think the best first step is to check out the portal and see what we have. And then please feel free to reach out to the staff at the Provincial Archives. We're always happy to assist with research inquiries. There may be something a bit more specialized too that you're looking for. I would really encourage people to go on the new collection search also, just to take a look at what might be there. But then if you're looking for a certain time period or certain records, you know, I'd really encourage people to reach out and ask questions. But it's a great first place to start. And there's some wonderful, like I believe you were talking about the book that Jim Rees has written. And there's other resources and articles that are written. I believe there's one there by Peter Toner as well, too. So, and then the other exhibit link to Stuart Donovan's work as well. And that kind of helps bring a full picture. I know that the conditions that were faced both at Middle Island and at Partridge Island too were really awful, and there's letters that document that. And I'm trying to remember the name of the doctor. There was a very pivotal doctor, and I want to say his name was a doctor Stewart, if I'm not mistaken. And he ended up nursing a lot of the sick on Partridge Island, but it was very, the conditions were grim. Like, I remember reading a letter about people being buried in shallow graves, and, you know, there being a lot of people arriving in waves at different times, especially around the years of the famine.
So, and I'm not asking you this to pin you down or anything, but is it in the plans at any stage that you're aware of where Partridge Island might be restored to a point where it's some way accessible, and even portions of it?
That's a good question. I really couldn't say, Austin. I'm sad to say. Now, one thing I do know is that Partridge Island is one of the places that is on the National Famine Way. So there was an installation near Tin Can Beach in St. John of the brass shoes that mark the Famine Way, which I believe starts in Roscommon at Strokestown Park and goes to various places now internationally, including St. John. So it's wonderful to see that. And that was only installed in 2024. And I feel like that really helps promote awareness of the island's history and the importance to the Irish community, but also is a reminder too of people who, you know, come to New Brunswick in various hard circumstances.
So, Merdan, we'll wrap up, but before we wrap up, we will point out exactly where people can find all this wonderful information. And it is available at archives2.gnb.ca, and there's Irish, it'll lead you through it there, and you can get to the various databases, and the front menu, as I say, it leads you on from there. It's a powerful resource, and I guess if you just do a search on Google for New Brunswick Irish Portal, that's probably the simplest way of getting there. And it'll lead you in where there's newspapers, passenger lists, teachers' petition database, and the Irish immigrants to New Brunswick, the census information 1851, 1861, Brennan's funeral home records, and the Fitzwilliam estate, which of course we're very familiar with because of all the work around Culloden. And there's Provincial Secretary Immigration Administration records, as well as the St. John Almshouse records. Powerful, and as Meredith mentioned, the immigrant letters. It is a powerful resource. Again, just do a search on Google, the New Brunswick Irish Portal, and it'll bring you there. Meredith, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been fascinating and a real pleasure connecting with you and learning.
Oh, Margaret, Austin, it's really a real pleasure to speak to you today.